thank you for everyone for being here. Okay, we'll switch gear a little bit. The previous presentation on the field, nitrogen response, and I'm going to report a study in lab. Nitrogen transformation and nitrous oxide emission affected by biochar amendment and fertilizer stabilizers. I would like to acknowledge my co-author, Zhe Jiangcai, first. And he did most of the research experiments when he was visiting USDA ARS in my laboratory at Poly, California. He's back in Chinese Academy of Agriculture Science in Beijing now. We all know nitrous oxide is a very important greenhouse gas because it has a 300 times global warming potential of that equivalent mass of CO2. And agriculture contributes to more than half of the global N2O emissions. And there are so many studies we have heard from yesterday's session and the posters and on the reducing nitrous oxide emissions. And several years ago, we started measuring emission, N2O emission from a pomegranate orchard, and we determined also in the lab, and soil water content is probably one of the most important environmental factors, and in agriculture practice, you can manage to minimize N2O emissions. And there are also the potential of using biochar amendment and nitrogen transformation inhibitors to reduce the emissions. At this time, however, there are so many unknowns how these treatments affect the nitrogen transformation process related to the N2O. So the specific of this research was to examine nitrogen transformation processes and the relation to nitrous oxide emissions from biochar amendment and the use of the inhibitors. And we used the lab incubation experiments and used a soil, Hanford soil, sandy loam soil collected from the pomegranate orchard, and the soil was incubated in plastic containers but at a constant temperature room of 25 degrees. The soil water content was adjusted to 10%, which was a little below the water holding capacity, 12% of these soil samples. We did three experiments. The first one, we investigated biochar and agrotin, which is a urease inhibitor, and NSERV24, which is a nitrification inhibitor. Why these two materials? Because they are the current two materials registered in California. The second experiment, we invested the inhibitors again, but from a different source of nitrogen, urea, and ammonium nitrate. The first one used the urea only. And at the same time, we also investigated the potential of using potassium thiosulfate as a nitrification inhibitor. And because it's a fertilizer, if it works, it had more advantage than those inhibitors in terms of concern over the chemical constituents in the product. So because it's fertilizer, we investigated different ratios from low 0.25 to 0.5 to 1 as a K2O to a nitrogen ratio. Thirdly, we determined the biochar adsorption capacity for ammonium, which is proposed to be the most important mechanism to reduce the emissions. So all the treatments were tested in three replicates. I think just a few pictures showing the sampling vials was pre-flushed with a high purity nitrogen, reduces the nitrous oxide background, and Zhejiang collecting samples, and the samples was preserved in the glass vials, and then analyzed on gas chromatography with micro-ECD. And the emission rate of nitrous oxide was calculated based on the linear increase of nitrogen concentration collected from the container over time, and then you divide by the soil mass. Okay, works. At the same time, we'll also take soil samples, analyze all the mineral nitrogen species. So use that, you can predict what's the dominant transformation process going on at that time. and also we measure soil pH. So before I report the results, let's go over, review quickly about the nitrogen transformation processes. From urea application, urea goes quickly through hydrolysis, which gives the ammonia and the hydroxyl. So this reaction will cause the pH goes up. And the ammonium next could go through oxidation or the nitrification to form nitrate. Nitrate. And this process you form protons. So the first one you have a two nitrogen, you form a two hydroxyls. And the second one you hold each nitrogen form two protons. So two would be four protons. So you have a two net proton production. So the process, this is soil acidification process. So why nitrogen fertilizer causes soil pH goes down. The nitrification is actually two steps. First one is the ammonium is oxidized to nitrite. And the nitrite is not stable, as we say, and is can be further oxidized to nitrate. And but with the inhibitor, this could accumulate. And lastly, the pH affects the form of the ammonium. If you have a high pH, which means you have a hydroxyl, and it tends to form the ammonia, causes the volatilization loss. Here, let's look at the results. This is from first experiment. This N2O emission rates on the left side, cumulative emission loss from on the right from urea addition affected by biochar and the two inhibitors. And the control, you see, has the highest emission rate and it also lasts longer, up to almost 3 weeks. And the biochar does not have too much effect, so it increases the same rate, but it did started to decrease quickly to at least half or more than half below the control. The agrotin is the urease inhibitor. It's delayed the nitrous oxide emissions, and the NSERV, the nitrification inhibitor, even delayed more. But however, notice it does go pretty high, but it goes down pretty quickly. After about 25 days, it's very low, so we stop at 35. You calculate the cumulative emission loss, that is the rates multiplied the time, add them all together, you get the total emission loss as a milligram nitrogen per kilogram soil. The control had one, all other three treatments had less than three, so meaning all those amendments reduce N2O emissions by almost over 70%. This slide shows the detailed nitrogen species concentration changes during the incubation period. And the first one is the ammonium, and on the right, that's the nitrate plus nitrite. And the last one, that's nitrite, this is the soil pH change. Just examine a little bit about the first one. The biochar and the control and the NSERV, which does not inhibit the hydrolysis process. So they all have this increase of ammonium, so that's hydrolysis going on. And then the biochar and control start decreasing because this NSERV inhibits the nitrification process, so you have this longer time of accumulation of ammonium in soil. But however, notice it doesn't stay too long. After about a week or so, it started decreased, and I have trouble with this. Okay, started decreased, and while the ammonium decreases, that's correspond to the nitrate increase, so that's nitrification kicks off. Okay, the only one delayed the ammonium formation is the agrotin because it inhibits the hydrolysis process. However, again, you do see this peak concentration. It does increase. That means it's not actually inhibiting the whole process, it just delayed the process. I call this separating the hydrolysis process. The soil pH data support this, all this speciation data very well. So you see the hydrolysis cause the pH to increase, and the electrification cause the pH goes down. That's why the NSERV has a higher pH, lasts longer. When it goes down, that's indicate the electrification process. And the agrotin also because it delayed delay the hydrolysis. That's why you have a slowly increase of pH, but it does get to the top, then it does go down. So the soil pH is about 7 neutral. All these indicate lower pH, that's nitrification going on. So I guess from this point, I just see the in terms of reaction, the inhibitors are more effective within about 2 weeks. Short-term effect, that's what I conclude well. The nitrite concentration in the soil does increase to a peak time, you start to decrease. And we found out this nitrite concentration, the pattern follow exactly what's in N2O emission. Okay, this second experiment from the UAN, again, it shows the control has the highest emission rates, and both the two inhibitors did delay the process for some time, but over up to 3 weeks, there's not much difference from the control. From the UAN, with the KTS treatment, you see this busy figure. However, you can see the two lower ratio of KTS did not have much difference from the control. The only one worked well to reduce the N2O emission rates is the highest ratio at 1:1 of KTS to nitrogen. And again, you know, by day 35, there's not much difference among among all of these treatments. And this again shows all the species change. So you can use this data to derive and or predict what the dominant process is going over time. And I would like to point out the last one, that's the nitrite concentration change again. It does show a peak increase and then decrease. And we found they follow exactly the same pattern with the N2O emissions. This one, okay, I'm losing time. In terms of the inhibitors reduce the emission last column, so the no amendment, you have 0.6%, and all the nitrogen, that's below 0.2. And for the second one, you have 0.4 from a no amendment, and again, this one indicates about 60% reduction. The KTS on the highest one probably reduces 50% emissions. And all the data, you plot all of them together, there's a positive correlation between soil nitrite concentration and the nitrous oxide emission rates. It can serve a good indicator, not any other species. Previously, also this actually defined by water content range. If above water holding capacity, you get a much deeper slope in increase, and below, you get a much lower. That's in this case. Okay, biochar has a tremendous capacity to absorb NH4. This one shows it increases linearly as the ammonium concentration increases in the soil. It's not the case when you do with the surface. Well, if you do this experiment, keep in mind is because you have higher pH of the biochar, the ammonium you add it to, you tend to form some as the ammonia. So actually, the data I report, you actually extract with 2 molar HCl. This figure just shows how much NH3 assumed lost in our vial. So the lower concentration you use and the higher percentage you lose, that affect the accuracy of your experiment. So finally, to summarize, the nitrogen transformation inhibitors or the biochar can be effective to reduce N2O emissions with a potential over 50%. However, the effect is short-term. And because it's short-term, and then you to maximize the inhibitory effect in terms of field management, so you have to correlate with the plant growth, nitrogen demand application schedule, etc. So this study further confirmed that linear correlation between soil nitrite concentration and N2O emission. And KTS inhibits nitrification processes, but only works at a higher rate. And these amendments, of course, because of diversity of soil, diversity of crops, needed to be studied for specific agronomic systems in the field. And finally, I run out of time, probably no questions, but if you do, you can find my name, working address, email. Yeah, okay, sorry.
Yeah. And we're break now since somebody dropped out, so you guys can ask questions.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yes.
So 1% on a basis, I mean, in tons per acre would be an extremely high rate of biochar. I figured out it might be 10,000 tons per acre incorporated into the top 3 inches.
That's a really good question. I did not do that conversion yet. Well, I think the 1%, we have a 3 kilogram soil. 3 kilogram soil, there's a 1%. Yes, we did 30 grams over there. That's right.
An acre foot of soil is 4 million. 3 inches is 1 million.
1% yeah.
of 1 million is...
Yeah, well, in the field, in the field, it doesn't work that way, I think. Yeah, I think in the field, depend on, you know, this lab, you can do, it's a problem. In the field, it depends on how deep you're going to incorporate, you do 6 inch or you do, you know, that effect. Right. So in, as a matter of fact, actually, we're doing a field study right now. It's about amendment on awning. I'm trying to do all these collectible data in the field. I think we're shooting for 30 to 50 ton per acre, I think, based on what's recommended by the manufacturer. Yeah. Yes?
Was this a fresh biochar, or how long had it been in the soil?
I got this biochar from a Blue Sky Diamond Incorp. So they sent the material to me last year. It's dry. It's about a year they send me. We think a year. When they give us, we did the experiment within 6 months, but I don't know when they...
Yeah, well, the point is that with time and soil environment, you have oxidation to the surface, you have absorption of organic compounds, and the functionality of the chart changes as a function of time.
Right.
So what you get on the first year may not be what you get on the second or third year.
Yes.
The long-term impact is what's more important here.
Yes, that's a really good question. It's like, you know, that's why I think right now we see the biochar just a short effect, but the long-term effect, we really don't know. That's another area, I guess, you know, who does the
future work,
but it does, and the weather, you know, it absorbs the ammonium over the time, does release that, but if it does not release, it reaches capacity, it may not work anymore. I think the biochar is because it's a carbon sequestration with the other benefits. That's okay. Just look at it. If it's good, it's good for everything. Yeah. Any other? Yes.
So I have a question. What was the initial soil pH?
Around
like water tuition.
Yes, it's around 7 neutral.
And then it went about.
Yeah, it goes up. It's because of hydrolysis. When you urine hydrolysis, you keep that, you see it went up to 8 or something. It's hydrolysis, you cause the urea hydrolysis, you form the hydroxyl, and the nitrification happens later, that causes the pH goes down.
But when you added biochar, it follows the same pattern, right?
No, the biochar is a little complicated. The biochar first, you don't see it. I think that's why the N2O goes down, is because there's a connective involved. You know, you form the ammonium, I don't know how long it takes to get on the biochar and how much it would absorb. But the biochar, that's our, how do you say? We propose it. The biochar, we could not think about any other things except you can absorb the ammonium. The ammonium is the only you have. After hydrolysis, you have the ammonium, then it can be absorbed on the biochar. Oh, by the way, we did the nitrate, it does not absorb nitrate at all. So it's only, I think it's the only place with the ammonium. Yep. Yes?
I'm curious on the per acre calculations and how we're thinking about the use of biochar in applications. Like in your study, if I have your purpose correct, you want to really
try to
use efficiency, correct?
Right.
And reduce N2O emissions.
That's the end, right. That's the goal.
So why, these things, are they normally broadcast and filled into the top number of centimeters, or do you concentrate these in the furrow itself so that you're using actually far less on a per hectare basis if you're actually using them in combination with your nitrogen and you're concentrating that rather than broadcasting it. And then your calculations aren't correct because they come way down on the use of all of these compounds.
Yes, that is a great question. And yes, that's practical, but to me it's like the biochar, everybody trying to determine the potential, the benefits of whatever it is. I think the rate, I referred to the question earlier, it affected by how much it costs for growers. If it costs too much, I'm not going to use it. You know, as earlier the first speaker saying, you have to be beneficial in terms of cost if they make money without putting too much there. And so, and their company, that's why they have a recommended rate, I think most like a 30 to 50 tons per acre or per hectare, I forgot that number. For in terms of how to applicate, how to apply it, that's another challenge actually. The biochar, because through after the pyrolysis, it's very light, it's like a powder. And if you apply for the surface, it just blow away by wind. And if we apply, how do you apply it? You use by hand, it's too much work in the field, right? So actually USDA areas, I think from Arizona, the office, and they were communicating with my unit research leader, so we kind of joined. They have a machine to apply the chicken manure. Dr. Karamet, your problem. Yeah, he's here. So they use that machine to apply the chicken manure. So they ship the machine to our unit, so we're trying to use it to apply the biochar into the, like the, between the, you, when you apply, it's going to be like a, you know, for somewhere. You have to bury it. We said, well, that may not be good, but if we got nitrogen over there, this biochar has high pH, you may lose higher ammonia loss. And that's the way we think it's better. We need to cooperate in the soil. I think what we're planning to do, bury it, apply it first, then the onion, it will form beds. The machine doing the form bed, it will mix it. But the depth is probably about 6-10, at least 10 inches of surface soil, I would think. Yep. Great discussion. So anyone has a comment?
Well,
yeah.
Nationally or by state, how many tons of biochar are being produced right now, and when are we ever going to get there?
How many come through?
There?
Yeah.
So in this circumstance, yes, biochar is expensive, right?
Yeah.
But if you've increased end use efficiency and decreased end loss, then that's an economic value as well, right?
Yes.
But I think it's incumbent upon a lot of the companies that are producing this stuff right now to show this benefit. And there are many soils in the U.S. where it has no benefit.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so I think we need to be a bit more strategic here and not think that, oh, I'm going to produce tons and tons and tons of biochar and then wonder why my customers are not buying it. You know, we really have to have a practical and economic payback for the user, unless we're going on something like carbon credits and fixed carbon, and then we're getting into climate discussion rather than the agronomic discussion, right?
Yeah, you know, our unit, we want to continue, we want to probably do a long-term study on the potential using biochar, because in California there are other problems. California, on the coast, the vegetable area, they have almost statewide nitrate pollution in groundwater, and I think if biochar can absorb it, there's a potential to reduce the nitrate leaching. And also the other term, but we don't know. It's affected not only by the capacity, also dynamics. In the field, everything's dynamic. You know, it may work, it may not work. There's another problem in California Central Valley. The temperature is so high, the soil organic matter is more than below 0.5%. And we're losing the organic matter. And thirdly, you have so much agricultural post-harvest materials. What do you do with that? They burn it. And if somebody can figure out a way, cheap way, make it affordable with the biochar and return to the soil. Well, there's so many unknowns, but great discussion. Yeah, we'll discuss more. So anybody else? Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, everyone.